good to nobody, no good for nothing, because you're either too old or too young or too fat or too thin or too ugly or too this or too that.
Folk music is one of the first social media communicating news of social import. It still does so today. Join me, Don Jacobson, on Friday, October 25th, 12 noon to 1:30, for Sing Me a Song of Social Significance. From Woody Guthrie to Cy Conn, you'll hear songs that are meaningful to your lives, songs that are inspiring, and songs that are just fun to listen to. Cy Conn and David Rovick's CDs will be available as thank you gifts for your pledge. 12 noon to 1:30, Friday, October 25th, only on KBOO.
KBFA brings the listening public the other point of view.
There was a strong sense that this was the beginning of something that would spread across the country.
On Sunday, November 3rd, at the historic Hollywood Theater, KBOO presents an exclusive benefit screening of the film KPFA On the Air.
This documentary tells the powerful story of the beginnings of listener-sponsored radio in the United States with the birth of Pacifica in Berkeley in 1949.
KPFA On the Air chronicles the origins of the free speech movement, the first stirrings of the student movements at Berkeley, and opposition to the Vietnam War in the early 1960s.
Eventually spawning a network of free-form, independent radio stations across the country, including KBOO, which came on the air in 1968. So come join us at the Hollywood Theater, Northeast 41st and Sandy Boulevard, Sunday, November 3rd, at 7 in the evening.
Help keep community radio strong and thriving into the future.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, proposals for strengthened police oversight presented to City Council meet opposition from the police chief and union leaders.
The first major national rally against NSA surveillance is set for this weekend in Washington, D.C.
And tests confirm that radiation levels at Fukushima in Japan have doubled overnight.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, October 24th, 2013. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266, which spells KBOO. I'm Robert Barncourt.
And I'm Jen Chavez. Portland City Council's Wednesday meeting stretched for 4 hours into the evening, focusing on proposals by the city's Independent Police Review Division, or IPR, for strengthened police oversight and accountability. One major proposal would allow the group to directly speak with officers and civilian police bureau staff and compel them to testify as part of IPR investigations. Currently, only police can directly interview other cops. Another aspect would require the police chief to explain to the police commissioner, Mayor Charlie Hales, any decision to stray from disciplinary recommendations made by the Civilian Police Review Board, and to add information about PRB cases to public records. These come in the wake of a settlement agreement between the city and the Department of Justice last year, following a federal report on the Bureau that cited issues with accountability and excessive force. Chief Mike Reese and representatives of police unions, namely Union President Daryl Turner, strongly objected to many of the main components of the IPR proposals. Mayor Hales ended the meeting by shelving the issue until December, citing the complexity of the proposals and the debate. Today, I spoke with IPR's director, Constantine Severe, for more information on yesterday's meeting.
The police chief, Mike Reese, as well as union president Daryl Turner, expressed strong objections to the expansion of your investigative capacities, arguing that it would change your group's fundamental role and take discipline out of the Bureau's hands.
Unfortunately, I believe some of that is a misrepresentation. You know, the way it works in Portland is that the commissioner in charge of every bureau is the final authority. So for the police commissioner is the mayor. So he's in charge of discipline. IPR, our role is not to be decision makers about discipline. We are a complaint intake center. We also participate in investigations. We conduct investigations, but we don't make decisions about discipline.
How would you say that your proposals are in step with or related to recommendations made following the Department of Justice's federal investigation into the police department?
Our proposals, I believe, line up exactly with the Department of Justice settlement agreement, particularly talking directly to police officers. The Department of Justice settlement agreement in Section 128 says that IPR, the Independent Police Review Division, has to have the ability to conduct meaningful independent investigations. We have a pretty decent partnership with the police bureau when we need to do these investigations, but if for whatever reason we had to do a wholly independent investigation and we didn't have the mechanism to make that happen, I do not know how you can call that investigation meaningful or independent. And this, the DOJ settlement agreement is something that council approved November 14th of last year, so we're closely approaching a year anniversary. So it's important for the city of Portland to meet all of its obligations regarding that document.
Reese and Turner also argued that some of the proposals given would circumvent labor processes. What's your response to that argument?
Just from the advice that we received from the city attorney's office, that our code changes would not be a mandatory subject about bargaining. Another point would be that, let's say for instance that this is for some reason bargainable, right now we are currently bargaining with the PPA, so I don't see why the city isn't negotiating this. We've notified our partners in the city months ago. We've been working on these code changes since November of last year.
Another code change that you proposed regarded Reese's need to explain disciplinary actions that he decides upon that stray from the recommendation of the police review board. What was the basis of his aversion to that proposal?
Just to be honest with you, I don't really understand it. We're not asking for creation of a new document. I understand sometimes these documents do exist in one form or another, but what is important is that we have a record of what is the chief's decision-making process, because whenever you choose to impose discipline on an employee, they have the possibility of grieving that action. And so if some third-party arbitrator, a neutral arbitrator, is looking at this, we have to have the ability after, you know, let's say somebody retires or people move around, that we have some sort of memoranda of what this decision-making process was. What was the rationale? Because the police review board, it's anticipated with the Department of Justice settlement agreement, will be relying on a discipline guideline, and this is going to be a tool for them to be able to have objective, consistent discipline. So if the chief decides to not follow what the police review board has recommended to him, that's definitely his right, but we need to have some sort of objective criteria for that, whatever that is.
There were several testifiers yesterday that expressed concern that the policy proposals wouldn't go far enough. Do you feel that going further than this is feasible at this time?
I think, you know, for our accountability system to work, we have to have certain baselines. If folks in the community feel like our system needs to have more checks or more authority, whether it's our CRC, which is a citizen review committee, or how the police commissioner makes discipline decisions, I think that's a conversation that we need to have, but we can't lose sight on there's this Department of Justice settlement agreement that the city of Portland said that it would do a year ago. And at least on the police accountability part of it, we haven't implemented a good chunk of it at this point. So it's important for us, one, to make sure that we have an oversight system that meets the expectations of the community and kind of grows with the community as the community grows. But, you know, we shouldn't try to, I guess, hold off on making needed changes because we want even more changes. I don't really think it's a either or. I think, you know, we need to do both.
I've been talking to Konstantin Sevier, the director of the Independent Police Review Division. This has been Jen Chavez for KBOO News.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. So now we're asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Lynn and Conch to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thank Hello. You, Robert. And yes, because these folks every day come in all afternoon and work to give us locally produced news. A rare little bird is locally produced news. They are not around much anymore. So to keep that sort of thing going, you need to call 877-500-5266 right about now. It's evening. Do it before dinner. If you're driving home, just pull over to the side of the road. No problem whatsoever. Or maybe you're stuck in traffic. A really good way to spend that time. 877-500-5266.
Yes, Robert and Jen and some of the other newsmakers, news bringers are people that you see in your neighborhood working their day jobs. You might run in and have a conversation with them at your various place of business. But here they love to come in for hours at a time because they are making a huge difference. They are bringing the breaking news that's happening around town and around the country, around the world, to you before anybody else gets a hold of it because, you know, they're not sort of in a lofty high-rise somewhere. They are at street level here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, where you can come in and pay your pledge in person, become a member in person at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. You can also go on the web, kboo.fm. Look for that jar that says Donate Now, and that'll take you through all sorts of options. Or you can call. Call right here with our volunteers in the back, and they are very, very helpful. The number to call is toll-free. It's 877-500-KBOO. That's 877-500-5266. You know, I mean, our staff doesn't get a king's ransom here. The few staff that we have about 6 full-time equivalent staff, which means a lot of them are part-time. One of our full-time people is the news director, Jenka Soderberg, who is a Stanford fellow, a Knight fellow, who went to Stanford and came up with an app called News Tips, which we have students here in town working on the actual mobile app for newsmakers, news givers, news gatherers to get their tips and share them on an open source basis. This is an incredible breakthrough. This is only happening at KBOO. The way that you can support this sort of amazing forward-thinking innovation is by calling 877-500-KBOO. That's 877-500-5266.
And back to the news.
Citizens in Sherwood, a suburb of Portland in Washington County, have launched a second petition to recall City Councilor Matt Langer after another petition failed to garner enough signatures in August. The grievances against him are rooted in a development deal involving his family's business, which is slated to bring a 145,000-square-foot Walmart store to Sherwood. Though Langer does not have a vote in the family business and was not involved in the town zoning decision for the site, opponents of Walmart say Langer has a clear conflict of interest. Many in Sherwood are worried that Walmart's presence would disrupt the small-town atmosphere. Another petition targets councilor and former council president Dave Grant for failing to represent the town's community values. A third petition aims to put a ban on 24-hour stores on the next ballot, another attempt to curb the effects of a Walmart-type store on Sherwood's livability. The petitions must garner at least 1,011 signatures in 90 days in order to force a recall election.
An economic report released today addresses shifts in the Oregon job market further away from traditional middle-class employment. In Oregon, middle-class jobs such as sales jobs, office support, and manual labor represented 67%, approximately two-thirds of all jobs back in 1980. Representation for the same middle-class jobs has dropped to below 60% in just 30 years. The report, entitled Job Polarization in Oregon, examines national job data and looks specifically at the growth or decline of wages from 1980 to 2012. 137,000 jobs were lost between 2008 and 2010 during the Great Recession, 88% of those being middle-wage jobs.
Since then, jobs in the high and low ends of the pay scale have recovered more quickly, while the middle-wage jobs, making between, say, $25,000 and $50,000 a year, have not. The report's author, Josh Lenner of the Office of Economic Analysis, attributes the change in part to a shift towards technology-based jobs, which help companies produce more without having as many workers.
Oregon is one of 23 states that has taken steps to keep kids out of the adult criminal justice system, according to a new national report that also recommends doing more. The Campaign for Youth Justice report examines the trend and says it's a positive one for young people. For more on the story, here's KBOO news reporter Genevieve McDaniel in collaboration with the Oregon News Service.
Oregon is featured in a new report that finds states are changing juvenile justice laws to keep kids out of adult prisons and jails. The Campaign for Youth Justice report says it's progress that young people in Oregon are not supposed to be detained in the same jail facilities as adults. But Shannon White with the Partnership for Safety and Justice says too many Oregon teens still are being charged as adults under mandatory minimum sentencing laws passed in the 1990s.
And we know that long mandatory sentences in the adult system not only aren't effective for youth, numerous studies have shown that it actually increases a youth's likelihood of committing a future crime.
The report says 8 other states have changed their mandatory minimum sentencing laws to treat juvenile offenders differently than adults. It also says when judges have more discretion in juvenile placement and sentencing, the outcome for troubled kids is better. Carmen Daugherty with the Campaign for Youth Justice helped write the report. She says in less than a decade, 23 states have passed juvenile justice reform laws that increase the likelihood that kids will have access to more age-appropriate facilities and services. She says the reasons are financial as well as behavioral.
Obviously, with states facing budget issues across the country, the dollars speak, and states are seeing that it's much cheaper in the long run to put kids in the juvenile system and truly rehabilitate them rather than just lock them up.
But Oregon's mandatory minimum laws mean for some crimes, juveniles are automatically transferred to the adult system, where a conviction stays with them for life. 12 states, including Washington, have changed their automatic transfer laws. This is Genevieve McDaniel with KBOO News.
The campus police officer made infamous after pepper spraying Occupy protesters at University of California, Davis, has been awarded over $38,000 in workers' compensation. In 2011, ex-officer John Pike was filmed spraying a sitting group of UC Davis students with military-grade pepper spray during a peaceful protest. The footage went viral, and Pike became a target for ridicule and criticism. Pike's personal contact information was then leaked, and at the height of the backlash, he received over 17,000 emails and 10,000 texts. Pike said he suffered anxiety and depression after receiving death threats from activists associated with the Underground Anonymous movement. After 4 months of paid leave, Pike left the police force. UC Davis awarded Pike a workers' compensation settlement of $38,059 for the psychiatric problems he endured during the negative publicity. The university agreed last September to award roughly $1 million to students who were victims of the 2011 pepper spray attack. Yet no individual student settlement is greater than what Pike was awarded.
You are listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every weekday to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news, and so now it's your turn. Joining us now are Conch and Lynn to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
I would say, Jen, that I would say that the best way to do it is to pull over because, you know, traffic's terrible right now. And just enjoy the sunshine. This is this amazing sunny October day. Very rare thing. So bask in that sunshine while you pick up your phone device and dial 877-500-KBOO. It's toll-free. 877-500-5266. You'll be glad you did. You'll watch all of the orange and yellow and red leaves for just 2 or 3 minutes while you talk to one of our phone volunteers and find out the best way to become a member, easiest way, and the way to maybe get a cool thank you gift, such as a flash drive with 4 gigs worth of amazing news and public affairs. Hours and hours and hours. You can take it with you and learn new stuff when you're out of town and away from KBOO. The number again is 877-500-KBOO. You know, I have to tell you on a personal note that your news anchor there, Jen Chavez, is not only an amazing news gatherer, an interviewer of newsmakers around town, but she is also a cultural maven as well. She did the film show just this morning and went out and got some incredible audio from people around town whose situation with the cinema scene is changing right now. So this is the kind of talent that we attract right here. Just incredible talent, people who don't care so much about money, but do care about the body politic and about the state of the media. And if you care also, it's only going to cost you $5 or $10 or $20 a month when you go to kboo.fm and donate now, or call 877-500-5266.
And we'd really like to thank some folks who'd cared enough to call and contribute this evening. Melville Renewed in from Oregon City, Renee, who is brand new from Falls City, and Italia, who renewed from Vancouver, Washington. We want to thank all of you, and thank all of you who are about to call, who are about to dial 877-500-5266. Because you know you want to do it. You're listening to the news. You might be listening to it on the way home, wherever it is. Take that traffic jam time and take that phone out of your pocket and call 877-500-5266. Or if you're still in your cubicle, if KBOO.FM is a nice way to sort of secretly in there. Contribute to KBOO. Get in there and click on the Donate Now button on our website. You can find it. It'll be fun.
And, you know, if you are in a cubicle that that is a major company, a lot of them have matching donations. So you can double the amount of your match. So ask your HR person at your company if KBOO is on their list of nonprofits. Probably is. And that way you can get double the donation when you call 877-500-KBOO. Another few people that would like to thank are our business partners who provide food for the volunteers who are on the other end of the phone at 877-500-5266. Today, those people are Tin Shed provided breakfast. They're at 1438 Northeast Alberta Street. The Observatory brought in lunch. They are at 8115 Southeast Stark Street out there in Montevilla. And dinner is provided by Dine In Tonight PDX. And they can be reached D-I-N-E-I-N, the number 2, N-I-T-E.com.
And, you know, if there's another great way to contribute, there's we have an event going on, the KPFA on the Air. It's the name of this movie. There was a guy named Lou Hill, who was, as the British say, a conchie, and came back after the war and thought that people should have their own radio stations. And he started the very first and oldest community radio station, KPFA in L.A., and it sort of bloomed into Pacifica, and KBOO came out of those ideas as well. It's going to be a really great peek at the history of community radio, something all you news junkies will love. Mm-hmm. KPFA on the Air. For a $60 minimum donation, you can have tickets for that, but you got to call 877-500-5266.
That's 877-500-KBOO. So give us a call right now. And, you know, keep on giving a call. But I'll tell you what, another thing, too, if you're on the east side of the Burnside Bridge, drop by 20 Southeast 8th Avenue because we have a funky mural outside, and we'll show you around. We'll give you a tour. This is a good time to look around. 20 Southeast 8th Avenue is our digs, and there's lots of stuff to notice here.
And we can become a member or renew your membership right at that time, I tell you.
We still have vinyl albums that many of our DJs play. They have their own collections. Go listen to one of our music shows is like listening to a lesson in musicology, in jazz, in blues, in any of the number of genres that we have. And so that's, you know, you can get turned on to whole new worlds this way. Sure, that stuff is on the internet, but we have people who know what to introduce to you, what they think you'll like, and new horizons. We're all about new things here. So give us, so if you are a new member, give us a call, 877-500 KBOO. If you're already a member, how about a gift membership? The same number, 877-500-5266.
Back to the news.
Yeah.
to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. And we in the news department would like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned at 6 p.m. for Wisdom of the Elders, featuring culture, music, and wisdom from Native American elders. At 7, it's Treasures from the Vault, a special broadcast of a 1962 debate between Malcolm X and Bayard Rustin on integration versus separation. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy and foggy in the morning, but will gradually clear up and reach a high of 63 degrees later in the day. Tomorrow night, we'll see increased fog and clouds, and lows dropping to around 46 degrees. And now for today's Radcast, a new feature on the KBOO Evening News reporting radiation counts measured by citizens in the Northwest and beyond. In North Portland, there's a 10-point rise in the radiation count since yesterday. The current count is 44 counts per minute, or CPM. Southeast Portland has a count of 27 CPM. Beaverton is at 28. Raleigh Hills, 31 CPM. Damascus is at 31. Seaside, 33. Spiking today, interestingly, at 54. Vancouver, Washington was at 33 CPM at 1 o'clock, but spikes throughout the day reached into the low 50s. Seattle is at 31, Bellingham, Washington, 32, Tenino, Washington, 34, with spikes into the 50s, and Vancouver, British Columbia, is at 24 counts per minute. Sitka, Alaska, has 35 counts per minute. And that's it for today's Radcast. For more information on radiation counts in your neighborhood, you can find No Nukes Northwest on Facebook.
It's 5:27, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
I'm 98% confident we can make a tomato that tastes substantially better, Professor Harry Klee recently exulted to the New York Times. Excuse me, Professor, but substantially better than what? One of Mama Nature's own heirloom varieties, perhaps? No, Klee knows that tomato-tampering flavorologists like him can't get near that quality. Rather, he's merely out to endow the industrial, mass-produced fruits of agribusiness with enough tomato-y taste to pass as a minimally acceptable version of the real thing. How? By artificially injecting them with some flavor genes from actual tomatoes. Why? So the corporate powers can retake market share and profits they've been losing to small producers of the natural product. Where did this guy come from? Monsanto, where he was employed for 11 years to help bring dangerously untested and unlabeled bioengineered food to market. Now, at the U of Florida's Institute for Plant Innovation, backed by Monsanto, Klee leads the effort to innovate what's called a chemical recipe for the ideal tomato. That mission raises another question. Ideal for whom? It'll still be a bland, mass-produced tomato doused with pesticides, machine-harvested while green and shipped across country. It's only ideal for the maximization of corporate profits. And beware, for the tomato is not the only target of this academic-industrial complex. Klee and company are also redoing the blueberry to be, as the Times called it, crispy, almost apple-like. Wow, I'll bet that next they'll manufacture apples to be almost blueberry-like. Why are the public's scarce research dollars being frittered away on these corporate projects? This is Jim Hightower saying, Klee claims that it's all about bringing back flavor. But Professor, flavor never left. Go to a farmer's market and taste for yourself.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
An oil pipeline spill in North Dakota last month went undetected for weeks, which has raised concerns about the lack of monitoring of existing and planned oil pipelines. The North Dakota spill, which originated from a Tesoro Logistics pipeline, has now been listed as one of the largest inland oil spills in U.S. history.
Now, regulatory and environmental groups have voiced concern about the monitoring of all oil pipelines, just as the Obama administration nears a decision on the approval of the Keystone XL pipeline. The Keystone XL would transport oil from Alberta, Canada, across the length of the United States to the Gulf Coast. The North Dakota spill was not detected by Tesoro and only came to light after it was discovered by a farmer who had smelled oil for weeks. The Federal Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration requires that companies have means to detect leaks from pipelines, but they offer little in the way of guidance or minimum standards. The section of pipeline in question was not explicitly required to have leak monitors or pressure sensors, and indeed it did not. Organizations like Pipeline Safety Trust say that companies are lying when they say that they can shut off spills in minutes. In fact, most spills last for hours or days or weeks before a landowner discovers and reports them.
A coalition of more than 100 civil liberties and computer groups have organized the first major rally against NSA surveillance to be held this Saturday in Washington, D.C. The rally will begin at noon on Saturday and will include the delivery of over 500,000 signatures to Congress, calling for an end to the mass surveillance of U.S. and foreign citizens by the National Security Agency. An online video promoting the rally includes Vietnam whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, several NSA whistleblowers, director Oliver Stone, and actor John Cusack. Here's a clip.
Revelations that have emerged in the past few months from whistleblower Edward Snowden and others
have painted a disturbing picture of widespread suspicionless surveillance of American citizens.
We got a wake-up call just recently.
NSA snooping includes the interception and collection of call detail records and internet traffic,
including audio, video, photographs, documents, chat logs, and emails.
Every American is at risk for getting caught up in the NSA dragnet,
including average citizens not suspected of a crime.
We have also learned of the large-scale collaboration with telecom giants, internet companies, and service providers.
Some concerned email providers have chosen to shut their doors rather than cave to government subpoenas to hand over their users' data.
We've been misled.
Does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans?
No, sir.
This is our information.
This is our information.
This is our information.
This is our information.
It is the digital archive of our lives.
Texts of our chats with our families.
The backbone of everything that we care for, our humanitarian causes and things that we fight for.
It is everything you use the internet for.
History tells us we need to watch the watchers.
And in a surveillance state, democracy itself is dead.
It makes a mockery of our system of government, which is based on the notion of independent branches of government, including a fourth estate, the press.
A free society should not have secret laws.
It doesn't have to present this false trade-off between security or privacy.
We need to bring NSA activity from the shadows into the light of day.
We need to end mass suspicionless surveillance.
KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with the producer of that film, Logan Price.
What are you hoping that the weekend's protest accomplishes?
Well, I think for one thing, it'll be the first time that this issue is really taken to the streets on this scale, which is an important thing. I think just, if nothing else, to show visibly that there's a lot of opposition to this, and you can have, you know, page clicks and stuff like that, and people visiting websites or signing petitions and stuff like that only go so far. And I think in order to be taken seriously, the more we're in the streets, the more we're able to get together and show our outrage about this issue publicly. It'll make a huge amount of difference. It'll be a pretty crucial winter, I'm told, as far as even things like bills being passed through the House and the Senate to try to peel back some of the Patriot Act allowances on mass surveillance and kind of change the way that the regulations work around it, as well as different legal efforts and other more popular efforts as well. So this is hopefully will be sort of a benchmark moment where everybody gets together and says, hey, and we're on the map and we're working together.
one of the things that's sort of astounding about it is that there's the coalition itself that has been working on this rally includes over 100 different organizations, internet companies, as well as a lot of really notable individuals. And I think even in that coalition, the organizations span from left to right. And that's sort of another important thing that we're hoping to sort of show with this gathering is that this is not a partisan issue. This is an issue that is very much every American ought to be outraged about, that their cell phone calls, their emails, their internet traffic, we don't even know the extent of it is being watched.
And what about the claim that this kind of surveillance is actually keeping us safe from terrorist attacks and that in the age of the internet, we have to collect all the data and then sift through it in order to find the types of communications that they're looking for?
I think personally, at least that's a very false assumption. I think that's what the NSA would probably like you to believe. But there's what is the famous quote about those who sacrifice liberty for security get neither. And so I think we're definitely like at that point right now where we have to make a decision, especially as more of these revelations come out, that actually we're not okay with being mass surveilled, and we don't even get clear answers about how useful this is even in, you know, catching terrorists or stuff like that, because it's very unclear. And, you know, James Clapper has lied to Congress, and it's sort of like the more this comes out, the more it's like actually this looks more and more like an excuse to just collect data on everybody. And I think the question really for the public is, you know, should we choose false security over liberty? You know, what does that mean? And if we become sort of tacitly complicit in the government watching all of our communications, you know, what doors does that open in the future? You know, if we're willing to forgive them for lying to Congress about it, if we're willing to let them keep these kinds of programs secret, it's not just our liberty now, but what does that mean for the future?
Well, thanks very much. I've been speaking with Logan Price. He's a filmmaker who helped produce the Stop Watching Us video and is part of the organizing of this weekend's protest taking place in Washington, D.C., where petitions will be delivered to Congress. How many signatories are there on those petitions?
I think so far there's well over 500,000.
Wow, so a pretty big size petition will be delivered to Congress this weekend by the coalition Stop Watching Us. Thanks for joining us, Logan Price.
Thank you so much.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Now is your chance to show support for the work our volunteers put in to bring you this newscast, rain or shine, every weekday throughout the year. And joining us now are Lynn and Conch to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thanks, Robert and Jen. It was an amazing story to hear about from Jenka, the Stop Watching Us Coalition. Well, we're going to say people, the feds and the corporate interests should stop watching us, but you should make sure you keep listening to KBOO. And the best way to ensure that you can is by calling 877-500-KBOO. That's 877-500-5266. This is a great time to call because there's only a couple of days left in the fall pledge drive, but it's going to get busy towards the end, so this is the time to call.
Absolutely. Call now, 877-500-5266. And, you know, FM radio is accessible to just about everyone, even if you don't have a fancy phone or a computer, which is hard to imagine, but there are folks that don't have everyday access to that. And we like to keep radio here. We are radio. We are terrestrial. 877-500-5266. You can certainly go to KBOO.FM any old time you want to, and that is great. But listening to the radio live, real, with a tower, with all that stuff, is something that everybody will need when the big one hits. When there are emergencies in other areas, there's not this just room where things are being played automatically. We have actual folks here who will help in time of need. And to keep that going, 877-500-5266 is the number to call. The contribution you make is your decision, but you just need to decision to do it now.
Yes, the KBOO.FM website, you'll know that that's the place to go when you want to hear your favorite show over and over again by podcast or by archive. And while you're there at KBOO.FM, you'll want to hit the tip jar and make a donation or call the old-fashioned way, 877-500-KBOO.
Surveillance activities undertaken by the National Security Administration, or NSA, have prompted heads of state in Germany and France to seek a coordinated response to the scandal. Most troubling for them were this week's allegations that the NSA has been spying on German Chancellor Angela Merkel's mobile phone, as well as intercepting the communications of millions of French citizens. Merkel and French President François Hollande met with each other at a European Union summit in Brussels to discuss a joint response, and Merkel made it an issue during the rest of the summit, saying, quote, "Spying on friends is not on at all." The summit fast-tracked new draft regulations governing the transfer of data between the U.S. and the EU, as well as the ability of U.S.-based internet companies to store private European data in the U.S. where it can be made available to the NSA. The Germans are not satisfied with President Obama's response to the allegations in a private conversation with Merkel, during which he claimed the NSA is not currently spying on her. This morning, German Foreign Minister Guido Westerwelle summoned U.S. Ambassador John Emerson. He delivered an ultimatum to the U.S., demanding answers to all questions regarding NSA surveillance in Germany and the adoption of a new no-spy agreement to regulate intelligence cooperations between the two countries and exclude mutual espionage.
In Ireland, earlier this week, authorities forcibly removed Irish children from their parents in two separate cases. Both families are members of the Roma community, one of the largest and most disenfranchised ethnic minorities in Europe. Irish police were alerted to children who, according to sources, did not look like their parents. The children were fair-haired and light-skinned, while their parents had darker complexions and hair. Authorities suspected foul play. However, DNA tests have proven that the children are, in fact, biologically related to their parents. Both children have since been returned to their families. The intervention follows a Greek case last week where a blonde child was taken from the Roma couple caring for her. The couple, who are not biologically related to the child, are being held on charges of abduction while the investigation continues. Roma rights advocates throughout Europe have expressed concern for the implications of this isolated Greek case, pointing to the racial profiling that occurred in the two Irish cases.
The level of radiation in the water at Fukushima doubled overnight, according to the latest tests. The current level is 14,000 times higher than the maximum safe level for drinking water. The samples were taken from drainage ditches near the storage tanks that have been the source of ongoing radiation leaks. Another ditch nearby also showed an increase of tenfold from levels recorded on October 1st. Today's reading sets a new record for radiation levels in the drainage ditch. There are no linings on the ditches in question, and the radioactive water continues to seep from the melting down nuclear facility into the Pacific Ocean. At the same time, Japan is bracing for the expected impact of two typhoons, Francisco and Lakima, expected to hit the island this weekend.
In the city of Tunis, thousands of Tunisians have gathered to demand the resignation of their country's government, currently headed by the moderate Islamist Ennahda Party. The protests mark the two-year anniversary of Tunisia's first free elections following the 2011 Arab Spring. Protesters are targeting Prime Minister Ali Larayed, who stated yesterday that his party will resign only upon the completion of the country's new constitution. Ennahda plans to set up a temporary caretaker government to take over after it steps down in anticipation of upcoming elections. A national dialogue that began in early October continues with the goal of steering Tunisia out of an ongoing political crisis. Tunisia's crisis was heightened by the July murder of left-wing parliamentarian Mohamed Brahmi, who was killed by Islamist militants. Elsewhere in the country today, Tunisian security forces fired tear gas at another group of protesters. The group had gathered in the city of Kef to protest outrage over the killing of 7 police officers by Islamist militants.
Secret intelligence documents and diplomatic memos about U.S. drone strikes in Pakistan, obtained by the Washington Post, suggest that Pakistan has endorsed the strikes and has been receiving classified information about them. This is in contrast to public expression of disapproval of drone strikes by the Pakistani government. Reporters with Feature Story News in Washington bring us this analysis.
The report is basically 2 Washington Post journalists, including the veteran Bob Woodward, who broke the Watergate scandal, the Nixon scandal. They've obtained lots of documents from the U.S. And basically what they show is that the Pakistanis have been cooperating from late 2007 until late 2011. Of course, relations broke down over the storming of the Osama bin Laden compound in the garrison city of Abbottabad in Pakistan. So it's not clear whether they continue to cooperate, but the documents do show a high level of cooperation in which they met regularly to discuss the success of operations where they targeted top leaders. And indeed, sometimes the U.S. accepted Pakistani requests to take people out with these drone aircraft.
Is there any sign that the U.S. will actually heed Nawaz Sharif's call for an end to U.S. drone strikes on Pakistani soil?
Well, in a joint statement, the U.S. and Pakistani leaders, the U.S. agreed that it would not violate Pakistani sovereignty, but it didn't say anything explicitly about drone attacks. And so there is a question mark about whether the Pakistanis may still accept some drone attacks, even though public opinion in Pakistan is virulently against any U.S. military intervention. And indeed, I think Nawaz Sharif's statements reflect Pakistani public opinion. But Shuja Nawaz, who's a fellow at the Atlantic Council here and an expert on the Pakistani military and establishment, says essentially he thinks though drone attacks are going to decrease, there will still be a fair amount of cooperation with the Pakistanis.
That segment was brought to you by FSN reporters in Washington, D.C.
2 journalists and a driver have reportedly been abducted in northern Syria. The reporter and cameraman work for Sky News Arabia and were abducted from the city of Aleppo in northern Syria. Arab press freedom groups have called for the immediate release of the journalists, stating that journalists covering the Syrian conflict are not parties to the conflict and should not be subjected to being abducted. Some press freedom groups have listed Syria as the most dangerous place for journalists since the conflict that began in March 2011 has escalated into a deadly and brutal civil war. During the Syrian conflict, dozens of journalists have been abducted and more than 25 of them have been killed in only the last 2 years.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Thursday, October 24, 2013. Israel's government to release new construction bids in West Bank settlements and troops kidnapped 2 civilians. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli State Radio reported on Thursday that the Israeli government is planning to release new construction bids in West Bank settlements during the coming few days. According to the radio, the new wave of construction will include a large number of settlements. According to international law, all Israeli settlements in occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem are illegal. On Wednesday, the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas called on companies in the European Union countries and other foreign corporations operating in the Israeli settlements in occupied West Bank and occupied Jerusalem to abide by international law by diverging from Israeli settlements. The Palestinian president said that those measures do not target Israel but are against its illegal occupation of Palestine and its illegal settlement activities. In other news, Israeli troops invaded on Thursday the village of Barta'a al-Sharqiyya in northern West Bank and gave residents a demolishing order against a public park in the village. The army claims that the park was made without the needed permission from the army. The residents say they did it on private-owned land by local farmers. The Israeli army already took land from Barta'a al-Sharqiyya to construct a section of the wall that surrounds the West Bank. Elsewhere, Israeli soldiers invaded on Thursday morning the village of Azzun near Qalqilya city in northern West Bank, as well as Bethlehem city in southern West Bank. In both locations, troops searched and ransacked residents' homes, then took two civilians. Troops did not give any reason for kidnapping the two men, local sources reported. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Thursday, October 24, 2013, news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Nastasia Voisin, Neil Gagnon, Genevieve McDaniel, and Sam Bowman. The producer is Jen Chavez. Our engineer holding everything together is Yonatan Schultz, and the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Philomath on Translator K282BH at 104.3 FM, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on Translator K220HR. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Jen Chavez. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Positively Revolting Talk Radio with an eco-feminist and anarcho-feminist perspective. At 9, on One Land, Many Voices, hosts Ned and Zaha speak with activist, blogger, and author Leila El-Haddad about her highly acclaimed cookbook, The Gaza Kitchen, A Palestinian Culinary Journey. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, tune in for a special program about community radio. Coming up next is Wisdom of the Elders, but first we go back to Conch and Lynn to talk about supporting people-powered community radio, the only 100% volunteer-hosted station in Oregon.
Yes, Wisdom of the Elders is coming up. That is produced here in Portland, and it's circulated to all the radio stations around the country and around the world. But first, we would love to take this opportunity to have you show your appreciation for the amazing, hardworking news people, most of whom are volunteers. We have a news director, and then we have dozens and dozens of news volunteers, people at the air room board, people editing the news, people out there gathering it. And it's all here for you to listen to every weekday. This is a great time to show your appreciation. 877-500-KBOO is the number to call. Toll free 877-500-4242. 5266. In these last couple minutes before we go to Wisdom of the Elders, we would love to make our goal, which we're about halfway there, about halfway to our goal of $400 for the News Hour. What would do it right now is a couple of $40 a year memberships and one sustaining membership of $10 a year. The $10 a year membership would get you a Democracy Now! T-shirt. It's red and white and blue all over.
And for an extra $30 with a Democracy Now! Thing, you can get Amy Goodman's latest book.
Amazing book that she's put out. You may have come to the event that KBOO put on when she was in town. She loves KBOO. She loves the people who listen to the show. And we know that you love KBOO too. So this is a great time to take your wallet out and show your love in the ways that are important right now during our drive, and that's by going to kboo.fm and clicking on the little donate now icon, or by calling 877-500-KBOO.
And, you know, we're nearing the end of the membership drive. Saturday is the last day. We need to make $125,000. If you've been reticent, if you've been thinking, oh, I'll do that later, this is a great time to do it. Do it before you eat your dinner tonight. Call 877-500-5266. Now is the time to do it. No more. You don't even worry about thinking ahead about this. 877-500-5266. It's time to contribute. Time to show the News folks how much you appreciate the ton of hard work that they do. 877-500-5266. Or KBOO.FM, or come on down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
Such a nice, sunny October day. Take a walk and come to this newly trendy. We have been here for so many years, but it's newly trendy. This LoBoo, as they call it, Lower Burnside Neighborhood, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
I had not heard that before. I like
that. Yeah, I know. It has little shops across the street. It's got little pubs and happy hour places. But the place to go is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, and talk to one of our volunteers back here. Look through the folder of tickets that you can get to concerts and shows and lectures, or our box of fun little thank you gifts. But the thank you gift that's most important is that you say thank you to KBOO for 45 years of bringing up the level of culture, the level of political awareness, the level of conversation and diversity that this town enjoys. And the way you can do that is by calling 877-500-KBOO. Toll free, 877-500-5266.
And you know, we have this great KBOO 4 gig audio flash drive. It is a heavy metal free.
Heavy metal.
And fleas. Heavy metal free. Flip style bamboo flash drive. And it's got a number and 300 tons and tons and tons of stuff. Phil McKibben, Amy Goodman, Greg Palast, all these people are huge supporters of KBOO. Raj Patel, Robert Jensen, Thomas Lindsay, and more. If you're a news geek, because you are listening tonight, I'm thinking you might be a news and public affairs geek, this is the membership gift for you. And that could put us, a couple of the folks getting one of those, could put us over the top for a $120 minimum donation. 877-500-5266, and you could get that $120 in little $10 bits, not $12 bits, $10 bits.
Only $10 bits.
Or get 12. And we don't care. We're fine. We're easy that way.
Well, I think for 12 and a half a month, you can get also that Amy Goodman book. You can give one of those away as a gift during the holiday season. Maybe you'd like to keep the flash drive. Maybe you'd like to give the book away to a friend or family member. That is a fantastic thing to do. Maybe you'd like to give your family member or friend the gift of KBOO. Well, let's see. How do you do that? One way is kboo.fm. Hit that donate now icon. The other really great way is toll free 877-500-5266.
The amount that you donate, that you contribute, is up to you. That is not for us to say. That is totally up to you. What's really important is that you do it, and you do it now. 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. You've got just a couple minutes left, about just like a minute minutes, and a half, 1 minute left. Make the news, have the news, make their goal. 877-500-5266. It's just part of the goal for the station, but it's an important one for these folks that spend their hard-earned afternoons here at KBOO making news. 877-500-5266.
Hey, are you a young activist? If you are under 21, you can become a full KBOO member for only $10 a year. You know, if you have $10, we'd love you to become a $10 a month member, but youth members can get in for $10 a year. That is a fantastic way to introduce yourself to the station. The number to call again, 877-500-KBOO. That's 877-500-5266.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
KBFA brings the listening public the other point of view.
There was a strong sense that this was the beginning of something that would spread across the country.
On Sunday, November 3rd, at the historic Hollywood Theater, KBOO presents an exclusive benefit screening of the film KPFA On the Air.
This documentary tells the powerful story of the beginnings of listener-sponsored radio in the United States with the birth of Pacifica in Berkeley in 1949.
KPFA On the Air chronicles the origins of the free speech movement, the first stirrings of the student movements at Berkeley, and opposition to the Vietnam War in the early 1960s.
Eventually spawning a network of free-form, independent radio stations across the country, including KBOO, which came on the air in 1968. So come join us at the Hollywood Theater, Northeast 41st and Sandy Boulevard, Sunday, November 3rd, at 7 in the evening.
Help keep community radio strong and thriving into the future.
Good people, KBOO 90.7 FM Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Afro-Caribbean All Music Festival. Nine bands will play genres and rhythms all originating from Africa, including Afro-Jazz, Calypso, Samba, Salsa, Reggae, and others. The event will feature the bands Jujuba, Love Nasuesa, Super Mokako, Roots Revolution, and others. The festival will be held on November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at the TAQ Center, 631 Northeast Grand Avenue, Portland, from 7 p.m. until 2:30 a.m. Come dance for three nights straight at the Afro-Caribbean All Music Festival, November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. More information can be found on the right-hand side of the KBOO.fm website under Community Events.
Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders, featuring the stories and songs of elders from the Native Nations who lived and still live along the Lewis and Clark Trail. I'm Arlie Neskai of the Diné Nation. In the next hour, we'll meet Crow Elder Joseph Medicine Crow, examine the Northern Cheyenne's refusal to exploit their natural resources, and listen to the music of the Crow Fair. We'll also explore the evolution of Christian hymns on the Crow Reservation and hear the story of the Southern Cheyenne from Peace Chief Lawrence Hart.